always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your daily Miami Heat podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're here talking about the Miami Heat's 117-100 loss to the San Antonio Spurs. Miami drops to 2-2 on the season. They're 2-1 now on this ongoing six-game homestand. The Spurs improved to 4-0. Very impressive start for them, especially being without Kawhi Leonard. The Heat, they were without Hassan Whiteside. They started Bam Adebayo at center. We'll talk about that a little bit and all of our takeaways here. But in general, David, you and I have a little bit of a difference in opinion on kind of how this game shook out. For me, I kind of took this as a silver lining. I come away a little optimistic. I thought that the Heat, look, they played San Antonio to a tie after the first quarter, 30-30. They looked fine in the second quarter, even though they are outscored by 5 points. I thought at halftime, they were down 5 to a team that could probably win 50 games even without Kawhi Leonard. That's the way I was looking at it, to one of the best teams in the league, a team that knows who it is. Miami's still sort of trying to figure that out. And for 2.5 quarters, really, I thought they played San Antonio really close, and they played them well, and they were competitive. And it was that run that the Spurs made, that 13-2 run that put them up by 15 points at the end of the third quarter, that really got the game out of reach for the Heat. And after that, they just ended up pressing. San Antonio had as much as a 20-point lead throughout the game. Miami couldn't really climb back into it. But for those, I guess I'm focusing in on those 2.5 quarters where they did play them pretty well. What do you think?
I mean, I do agree that there was effort there. There was some kind of a high level of energy for most of the game. Unfortunately, it also showed that San Antonio is a superior team and that Miami is not as good as we had hoped it'd be. I think I warned about this in our last podcast, that this game would be a more accurate barometer, I think, for where this Heat team stands, especially with Whiteside's continued absence. And to hear you talk about these positives, although it's always good to focus on those things and to remain as optimistic as possible, it sounds very similar to what we were saying about this team during the start of last season when they were going through their myriad of injuries and they were struggling to come up with infrequent wins. And, you know, what did we have to say about any superlatives? We're basically optimistic statements about their continued effort and their overall energy. You know, this is the Miami Heat. This is Eric Spoelstra-led team, and this is a group that is always going to try hard. Unfortunately, it falls short. And although that one defining run, the 13-2 run, is really what separated San Antonio, the fact that Miami's defense collapsed as completely as it did and allowed this team, without their best player, to take advantage of them, I think shows how much Miami has to improve if they want to be continued an upper echelon team. Considered, rather, an upper echelon team.
Do you think they played better in this game than they have all season?
No, I do not. I think there's Atlanta their Indiana. Well, yeah, you know, I would have said the Indiana game, to be honest with you. I think was their best effort. I mean, they gave up leads in both to teams that are not quite as good. You know, Atlanta is a team that's struggling right now. They have a roster comprised of mostly lower level, lower tier players. Indiana is kind of still figuring themselves out, and although we've seen some good things from Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, it's still not a team without a superstar, And so the fact that Miami had relinquished leads to both of those groups and had to struggle to hold on to a victory said a lot about them. And I talked about this in our last podcast, that I was a little pessimistic about this team because I think that they're resting on their laurels. They're not showing the kind of intensity that we expect from them. And again, Whiteside's absence certainly has a huge part in that. But I think this team, the fact that they were only down by a little bit, should have been able to hang a little bit longer to give a better effort, I think.
It's been three different starting lineups in the first four games.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough.
That's tough. Look, and you got to give the Spurs credit. Yeah, they didn't have Kawhi Leonard, but that's still a really good defensive team. And the Heat scored 100 points on them. And they did it in a way that they haven't really been playing all season. The Spurs held them to 26 three-pointers. Their average is almost 34 for this season. Small sample size, blah, blah, blah. But and they held them to 34.6% shooting from three-point range. Their average is 35.6% shooting from three-point range. I thought Miami did what they had to do. They got to the free throw line a little bit better. They made their free throws. And defensively, I thought they played pretty well considering what they were up against, which is a humongous Spurs roster that has guys like Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge in the middle, where Miami doesn't – they were starting a rookie for the first time in his career, Bam Adebayo. They were without Hassan Whiteside, who they've been missing even against Atlanta and Indiana. And that was a point of focus for the Spurs to attack and attack and attack the paint. And I thought Miami held up pretty well as the game went along, considering where they were at. But first, before we get into the rest of our Twitter questions and our spotlight players for the game – I've got a message for the fantasy basketball fans out there. So listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try our new favorite fantasy app. It's called Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys. Draft was launched in 2014 with the idea that the draft is the best part of playing fantasy basketball. The only problem, though, is that you only get to draft once in your whole season-long league, and traditional daily fantasy, that's dominated by sharks that can be intimidating. Not with Draft. On Draft, you could play with a live snake draft, no salary cap, with other people. Plus, there's no multi-entry or player overlap, so you don't have to worry about those fantasy sharks gaming the system. Draft is designed to make fantasy sports simple, fair, and fun. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night. Pick a draft and begin. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you could join one right now, or when you're done listening to the podcast. Here's my favorite part. After the draft, there is little to no lineup management. Just set it and forget it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute energies for you, so there's no temple rubbing over your fantasy lineups. And of course, you play for cash. Drafts start from just $1, and it goes up from there, so there's a draft for everyone. Again, no salary cap, live snake drafts, no losses because you forgot to make a sub for an injured player, and no fantasy sharks. Draft leans into the best part of fantasy sports. That's the draft, and you can play whenever you want. Join Draft today. All you have to do is download the app. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes or play right from your computer on draft.com. For a limited time, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. You knew there was a promo code coming. Here it is. Use the promo code LOHEAT, and you can get your first game for free and win real money by using the promo code LOHEAT on your first deposit. So, let's get into some Twitter comments questions. Thank you for everybody who used the hashtag AskLOHEAT to send these in. First one comes from, where's the name here? Taylor, via Twitter. Our defense isn't right without Whiteside. This game shows the value of Whiteside. He might be a keeper instead of a trade bait. Taylor, of course, referencing our trade bait game from the offseason. We have another one here from Jordan. It seems like our biggest issue was stopping Aldridge in the post. Do you feel like Whiteside would have made a big difference? What do you think, David?
Well, he's right about the defense. Certainly that would have changed things considerably. They made a concerted effort, as you said, to attack the paint, one that would have been significantly more obstructed with Whiteside's presence in there. So you think that they probably would have had a great difficulty. They could have done something different with his starting lineup. I'm not sure if Johnson would have necessarily started against Gasol, but maybe they could have had Olynyk to guard the slower Gasol and then have Whiteside try and limit Aldridge as much as possible. You know, a lot of Aldridge's points came on turnaround jumpers. That jumper that he unleashes with the full extension of those long arms, he gets that shot over anybody. There's hardly any lift. His timing is just so perfect, and he just, you know, takes one half a drop back almost, and all of a sudden he's just unloading that. And there's such a high arc on that shot. You've watched Portland for years. You saw him play. You know, it's just a thing of
when
beauty.
He's got that mid-range shot going, that turnaround mid-range, you can't stop it. It's unstoppable. That's why he's been a multi-time All-Star. When that shot's going for him, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, finished 12 of 20. And when he wasn't getting the shot to drop, he was getting to the line, also took 7 free throws, finished points. With 31 points. Really, really big night. So I think Whiteside probably would have made that a lot more difficult. He probably wouldn't have been able to shut him down, because I think Aldridge is ultimately quick enough to probably get past Whiteside and get to the room, get to the rim, if that turnaround's not available to him. But yes, I think he probably would have limited him.
I think Whiteside would have helped a lot. And in regards to Aldridge, Bam Adebayo started on him, and Aldridge just ate him up.
Absolutely.
The beginning. He made his first three shots on him. It's a two-pointers and a three-pointer. And Spoelstra, after a timeout, actually took Bam off of him and said, and after this timeout, Greg Popovich subbed in Rudy Gay for Pau Gasol. And he said, Bam, you go cover Rudy Gay. He had James Johnson switch on to LaMarcus Aldridge. And it didn't help a whole lot more. You know, it was just... Aldridge was just cooking tonight, and it sucks that Bam had his first career start against somebody like that. And I thought Bam showed some flashes. We'll talk about him later. But as far as Whiteside goes, look, Adebayo really couldn't stop guys going to the rim. Olynyk had a bad night. You're going to talk about him later, guarding guys, getting to the rim. Whiteside cleans up a lot of that stuff, and I thought San Antonio did a nice job with their drive and kick game. I thought they really got to their spots for the most part. Miami had spurts where they were good defensively. I thought that first quarter they played pretty well, but Whiteside's absence was felt, I think, in this game more than probably any other game so far in the season, in the last three games that he's missed, just because I felt like if Whiteside were there, things really would have changed a little bit more. I thought that San Antonio really took advantage of Whiteside not being there, you know?
Absolutely. Our next comment comes via Greg, who writes, feels like we're settling for too many mid-range jumpers. So clearly not happy with Miami's offense. What do you think about Greg's statement?
Well, the Heat had 12 mid-range points in the game. San Antonio had 20, but San Antonio is a mid-range team. They've got LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol. When Kawhi comes back, he's great in the mid-range. This has been a concern for me throughout the preseason. I'm pretty sure I've brought it up on the show, if not to you in private, but it does concern me a little bit that some of these guys settle for mid-range jumpers. I think Deion Waiters is guilty of it. Josh Richardson is guilty of it. Goran Dragic is pretty guilty of it, but I give him a pass just because he's so good in the mid-range. I'm okay with him taking them. But a lot of guys, James Johnson, they'll settle for mid-range shots where they really should just be stepping back, because they're better if... they're as good, if not better, from three-point range than they are in the mid-range. That said, given that that is a concern for me and it's something that I am watching on a game-to-game basis, I was perfectly fine with it today. Greg is right. They did take a lot of mid-range shots. Just from the eye test, I'd say they probably took as many mid-range shots almost as they did three-pointers in this game, which is about 26. I'd probably say they took that many mid-range shots this game. But I was okay with it given how San Antonio was playing. They clogged the paint. I mean... you've heard about the Steve Clifford defense, right? That he basically just clogs the paint and he just relies on his guys to close out on shooters, and everybody just goes right back and clogs the paint. That's basically what the Spurs do defensively for the last two seasons. They've taken the Steve Clifford blueprint, and that's what they do defensively. The Heat know how to play that, right? They know how to play Charlotte. They play them all the time. I think that they took that approach against the Spurs, and that's why you saw somebody like Goran Dragic get off to a hot start and guys really lean into that mid-range shot, because they know that it's going to be there. They know it's going to be open. Maybe they settled a little too much. They didn't work enough to get to the paint a few times, even though I thought they did a better job at that as the game went on. But in general, I was okay with the mid-range shots that they took, just because that they were open. San Antonio was giving it to them, and I was okay with it.
Yeah, I think... If on top of that, they also tend to slow the game down. They are masterful at controlling the pace. And that's something that Miami has done over the years as well, particularly not last season, I think, but probably over the season or two before that, maybe after the dissolution of the Big Three era, Miami really excelled at slowing down the pace, controlling the number of field goal attempts per game. And San Antonio has really taken that to another level. Miami shot only, what was it, 80 total shots. Field goal attempts. Yeah. And their season average is actually far higher than that, 91.3. Wow. Yeah. So as you pointed out, they took far less, you know, only 26 three-pointers as opposed to their season average of 33.
That was a good ratio considering 26 out of 80 shots from three-point range. That's not bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's just they just took less shots because of San Antonio's ability to hold on to the ball, pound it. They pound the rock. That's what they're best known for. They control the pace, use up as much of the shot clock as possible, and then get Aldridge to unleash that deadly turnaround jumper, you know, with 3 or 4 seconds left on the shot clock. And it worked for them. They control the pace. Miami didn't get to take as many shots. They couldn't push the pace, which is where they've excelled over the last season and a half. So I think that's just the overall key to Miami's bad offense wasn't necessarily the mid-range game or taking too many shots, but just they didn't take enough from any part of the court because of San Antonio's tempo.
I wonder if they could have pushed the pace a little bit more, but it didn't really seem like it. They had to work for their shots. That's part of what the Spurs do, is they make you work for your shots.
Whenever they tried, there was already somebody down there, either a DeJounte Murray or a Danny Green, already obstructing their way to the paint. You know, they're very good guarding the perimeter, as good, if not better, than Miami at limiting 3-point shots. So I think it's just it was a tough game for Miami to overcome because San Antonio is San Antonio. They're you know, as successful as they've been for a very good reason, and we saw it tonight.
All right, we're going to get to our last Twitter comment. But first, I want to tell you guys about the Heat Check. Are you interested in getting a weekly Miami Heat newsletter right to your inbox every Monday? It's called the Weekly Heat Check. It features a weekly column from me, usually, plus the best writing about the Heat from the week from all around the web. It also includes any news that you might have missed, links to the best Locked On Heat podcast from the week before, and usually the new Monday mailbag, and what to watch for in the games ahead. I also throw in some random stuff just for fun, like my favorite new music or a bottle of wine that I stumbled on, whatever, because I dork out about that stuff. But best of all, it's free. All you have to do is go to tinyurl.com/weeklyheatcheck and enter your email address, and then you'll start getting the very next newsletter. Again, that's tinyurl.com/weeklyheatcheck. All right.
I'm a happy subscriber, and I love getting that in my mailbox every Monday morning.
And it looks cool, I think.
I think so.
If nothing else, don't even read it. Just look at it.
That's what I usually do.
George Coles via Twitter says, I know we're only 4 games in, but is anyone regretting the James Johnson contract? It's going to be ugly as he gets older. Johnson looked horrible against the Spurs, and in this game, his shooting stats padded with basically unguarded shots in the fourth quarter when the Spurs were up by 15 points. So
that's a tough one.
Yeah,
this is perhaps the hot take cannon fully unleashed there. It's not like, you know, we've talked about James Johnson's season. He's been really, really good. They even brought it up during the ESPN broadcast. He's been really good as a playmaker, something that you and I have pointed out on a number of occasions. Leads the team in assists, has looked really fluid, has been such a key ingredient in the offense that when he's out of the game or in foul trouble, as he was against Orlando, that the offense seems to bog down. I had pointed out yesterday that I'd like him to take even more shots. He did wind up taking more shots, but as George pointed out, some of those came in the fourth quarter. Do you have the exact numbers of the number of shots that he took in the fourth?
Yeah, he was 7 of 8 in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, garbage time, he ate him up. 7 of 8 in the fourth quarter, he hit 2 free throws. That made him 1 for 6 for the rest of the game at the start. And look, I guess ugly is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, you could... My problem with this is that it's hard to just blame James Johnson for this loss. You could blame Bam Adebayo. You could blame Kelly Olynyk. You could blame Josh Richardson for going from 1 of 8. You could blame any number of guys for this loss. I'm not okay with just kind of pointing at James Johnson. I thought he's played really well throughout the season. He had a bad game against the Spurs when a lot of his teammates had a bad game. And he had a tough assignment. This is a game where Whiteside wasn't playing. Bam and Olynyk weren't getting the job done guarding Aldridge, so James Johnson had to take the toughest assignment, and that was hard for him to do that defensively on basically a play-to-play basis. He was playing center, and he was playing point center for a lot of the game.
There was one play in particular that I remember Mike Breen pointing out or maybe it was Van Gundy, where he was all over Aldridge, just really stayed right on him, moved his feet exceptionally well. And again, as the shot clock was expiring, Aldridge turned around, knocked that down from like 19 feet, a turnaround jumper, nothing but net, smooth. And there's nothing that Johnson could have done about that. Right. So, look, he's still contributing as a defensive player, even though tonight might not have been his best game of the season. He's contributing as a playmaker. He took more shots, even if they were in the fourth. And while the numbers certainly bear what George points out, one of the things that you and I talked about before the podcast was that, you know, maybe that was his effort to try and get Miami back in the game when they were mounting a comeback. And ultimately, that comeback fell short, but you can't blame him for trying or taking as many shots. Maybe they seem like empty calories, but conversely, you'd have to go back, look at each shot. Unfortunately, we just don't have the time to do that right now. But we have to look down and see whether or not those were just attempts to pad his stats a little bit, as George points out, or if he was just doing what's best for the win.
I think he was doing what was best for this team. I got that sense, like I said before, that this team just showed a really good effort. They didn't. We know that the Heat play hard. We know that they always play hard. We know that they're not a team that likes to give up. And I thought that's what that was. I think those numbers reflected that. All right. So let's move on to our spotlight players. We've been calling them players of the game, but we're going to switch it to spotlight players because we don't necessarily just want to talk about the player who had the nicest stat line. We want to talk about the player that really just stood out to us for better or worse. And in your case, David, tonight, for worse.
Yes. Kelly Olynyk, a guy that really shone during the preseason and that I personally was expecting quite a lot from him. Unfortunately, he just hasn't had – he had some good night. I guess he had a good night, a game against – I want to say Indiana. I'm not sure if it was. Yeah, I think he played particularly well against Indiana. Had some nice range there. But tonight, one of the knocks on him when he was coming over from Boston from Celtics fans was that Olynyk had really good games and then he would drop off the next game. And that kind of inconsistency is maybe why they didn't pursue him as heavily as they possibly could. I know they were trying to clear cap space so they could acquire Hayward and maybe make a run for Kyrie Irving, which is what they did. But Olynyk, you know, there were some inconsistency issues there. Tonight was one of those bad nights. Look, he had a okay 2 of 3 night for 5 points, but that defensive presence was just sorely lacking. And again, you could say that Aldridge is just a really, really good player. That's absolutely the case. But I expected Olynyk's length to be a little bit more, I don't know, make more of an impact. He wasn't particularly good going up against Gasol either. Seemed like he was out of place. Didn't set really good screens. Just a night where he seemed really, really out of it. And I think that's more indicative of the capacity to be inconsistent on a night-to-night basis. And so I was really disappointed in his performance tonight. I have no doubt he'll bounce back because that's been his MO over the course of his short career. But tonight, unfortunately, was the low end there. So I'm hoping he'll reach the high end soon.
Rim protection was bad. I mean, he kept getting caught in that three-quarter court zone.
Oh.
Where Manu just had this crazy Euro step right by him. And there's not, you know, you give him a pass because it's Manu freaking Ginobili. I don't care if he's 54 years
old. Not at 40 years old. No, not at 40.
Okay.
Not at 40, no.
But then Kyle Anderson, of all people, did the same exact thing just a few minutes later.
That's different. To me, Kyle Anderson's like the knuckleball of basketball players.
Okay, I get it.
His pace is, you know, he's just, you can't predict it. Like, you probably
also,
were.
You can't just let. You can't just let. Olynyk can't just let him do what he was. I mean, Olynyk literally spun around and did a 360. Like, he just.
It looked bad.
And this is why I hate plus minus, by the way, unless it serves the point that I'm trying to make. Kelly Olynyk, he was a +2, the only guy on the team with a positive plus minus. But you're right. It didn't look like that.
He only played 12 minutes for a reason. I think Spoelstra was aware of his defensive limitations. But there was another player who was victimized defensively who also had some good, you know, highlights offensively, and that's rookie Bam Adebayo, your spotlight player of the game.
That's right. Look, he got off to a tough start playing LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, the ball's on Eric Spoelstra to just throw Bam out there for his first start against Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge, who you knew Pau Gasol is not the player he once was. LaMarcus Aldridge isn't the player he once was. But they're both vets, and they know how to attack rookies. And you knew that that was going to happen, regardless of whichever player Bam ended up guarding. He ended up on LaMarcus Aldridge. The stats I pointed out earlier, LaMarcus went right to work, made 3 out of his first 3 shots against Bam. I think he started 3 for 4, but 3 of those shots were against Bam. He made all 3 of them, one of which was a 3-pointer. And Riley, or not Riley, Spoelstra had seen enough by then. Ooh. And took, I don't know what I did there. I'm not sure what happened.
Slip there, huh?
That was weird. and took him off. Said, bam, go guard Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay, of course, finished the game with 22 points. Not because of Bam entirely, but he had a great game. But there were flashes in that first quarter. Bam had an alley-oop from Josh Richardson. Later on, he got another alley-oop from Tyler Johnson. Guys were finding him on the roll. I thought he started to set better screens as the game went on, as he sort of maybe got used to NBA speed a little bit more, but that's still something he needs to work on. But, you know, he gets up really high. He shows flashes of being able to just get up and play above the rim, getting those alley-oops in ways that, quite frankly, he might be better than Hassan Whiteside, because Whiteside doesn't really like to do that. He more likes to slow it down and get into the post and go to work a little bit more. It seems like Bam really is embracing just, like, I'm going to set a great screen and then dart to the rim as fast as possible and look for the lob. And so I was reassured with that. Defensively, he had a nice block at one point in the first quarter. He came from the weak side against Dejounte Murray and just came from the weak side and just blocked him for as help defense and blocked a shot in a really nice play. So he showed flashes, which is what you want out of a rookie. Look, most rookies are bad, and he was not good, but I was reassured only because he had those flashes. He looked like he was recognizing the game. He looked like he was learning as it was going on. And that, to me, is what you're looking for out of a guy at 19 years old who's just getting his first NBA minutes.
Now, I agree with everything you said, but there was a moment there where he was holding the ball on the elbow, and one of the things that you and I both liked of his pre-draft workouts was his ability to space the floor.
Yeah.
He had a good 6 foot, 7 foot cushion from his defender there who was protecting the paint, or ready to slide over to somebody guarding the paint. And he didn't let go of the jump shot. He didn't even bother taking it. He didn't up fake. He didn't do anything, which I thought he probably could have gone for the fake and maybe driven past his defender. Maybe it's nerves.
Yeah.
Maybe he just wasn't quite sure what to do. Or maybe he's really not as comfortable with that jump shot as we had hoped he was.
I feel like he didn't want to force the issue as a rookie, but he should have, right? Like there was also a same exact thing. He would, in the preseason, we used to see him grab a rebound and just bring the ball up the court. Right. In this game, he would grab a rebound and immediately look for a guard to pass it off to before he would even take a dribble. And so if I'm Spoelstra after this game and we go back and look at that tape with Bam, I'm like, take the ball down the court, take that elbow jumper, be you. We drafted you because we like you. I started you because I thought you could do it. Just go be you. And that's fine from a rookie. Look, he's probably just trying to, like you said, nerves, doesn't want to force the issue, doesn't want to, you know, be a bad teammate and take what's considered a lesser efficient shot, which is a mid-range shot from a big man. You know, he's probably heard that. That's what I think. Okay.
You know, before you continue, sure. I just something you just pointed out right now, something I heard the Mavericks assistant head coach talk about during a preseason game in Orlando was one of the benefits of having guys like, you know, rookies. I recently wrote about Jonathan Motley, who's on a two-way contract with the Mavericks. It's neither here nor there. But the point is that he got significant playing time, and a lot of the rookies did during the preseason. And I think in tonight's case for Bam, just getting out on the floor for extended minutes provides something that isn't available to them normally, and that's film. It gives them the opportunity to sit down with an assistant coach as they fly to their next destination and say, look, this is what you did well. This is what you didn't do well. You could have switched here. You could have taken your shot there. You could have been more or less aggressive, et cetera. And that does certainly provide a huge benefit there. So I'm glad you pointed it out, because it jarred my memory of something that a coach himself had talked about being a benefit for players at that age.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see him get some NBA minutes, if nothing else. All right, let's move on to our second guesses. My second guess is Goran Dragic. He started 5 of 5 in that first game, and really the only reason the Heat were able to play the Spurs to a tie in that first quarter is because Dragic came out and just scored 10 points on his first 5 shots. He played really well, and then he missed his next 5 shots. But it was a while until he took those next 5 shots. And I thought that the Heat got away from him for a little too long there. I thought Dion didn't play very well at the beginning. He started to get a hang of things towards the end of the game in the second half. But it was, I thought that the Heat probably should have like they do when Wayne Ellington, we've heard them talk about, like, when Wayne Ellington gets hot, they start looking for Wayne Ellington to get him the ball. I thought they should have been looking for Goran Dragic a little bit more in that first half. Do you have any second guesses?
Yeah, I'll add to Goran Dragic, unfortunately, didn't have a good night from the free throw line either and didn't take any free throws, so that's a problem for him. You know, Miami isn't a team that shoots a lot. They could have used some more easy buckets at the free throw line. You brought up Ellington, and that's a guy. Beef did not play significant minutes tonight after a game where he had a historic performance there a couple nights ago. Only had 6 minutes playing time, took no shots, didn't even get the ball much, really. Had one rebound, one assist, and otherwise wasn't really much of a factor there. So that's a little bit of a concern. I imagine that he probably didn't provide much of a defensive presence there. I think as the game started to get away from Miami, maybe Spoelstra wanted somebody a little bit more aggressive, like either Goran Dion or Tyler Johnson, somebody who could be more effective driving to the hoop and not necessarily settling for outside shots, because San Antonio is also so good at protecting the perimeter there. But, only 6 minutes of playing time, so that's a concern. There are just certain lineups that Ellington's not going to be much of a factor in, and we saw that tonight.
My last note is on James Johnson. I know we just talked about I was okay with a lot of these guys taking mid-range jumpers. I prefer that he not. I'd rather him just play with three-pointers and at the rim. There's a number of times where he passes up three-pointers, and he either dribbles away from it and goes into the mid-range or just passes the ball completely. I thought that happened several times. I thought that happened several times for the Heat in general. They move the ball really well, and I love it. They're great at moving the ball. I think they entered the game second in assists or third in assists per game going into this game. That's a big plus for this team, but I do feel like they're unselfish to a fault sometimes, that they move the ball maybe just one pass too many, where they're passing up. You know, the whole idea is that pass up a good shot for a great shot. I feel like a lot of times they're passing up great shots for good shots, and so I'd like to see them reel that back in a little bit. Take the great shot when it's there. Don't look for a greater shot. All right, that's it. What's up next, David?
Up next, Miami faces the Boston Celtics on Saturday, the 28th. That's an 8 p.m. game, also at the American Airlines Arena, part of their home game. Boston's currently 2-2. They've got a game coming up against Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks before they face Miami, so hopefully they'll get a little beat up by the Bucks before they face Miami, but that should be an interesting test. Obviously Kyrie Irving struggling there. No Gordon Hayward, who's lost for the season, but they've got a big front line. Al Horford's always been a guy who has given Miami some trouble there. So I'm curious to see if Whiteside returns for that game.
Yeah, we won't have a recap for that, obviously, because it's on a Saturday night. But if something crazy happens, I'm sure we'll talk about it before our mailbag for Monday. Kyrie Irving, like you mentioned, get to see him. Should have been Miami Heat player Kyrie Irving, possibly, against the Heat. That'll be a good game. I've seen one Celtics game this season. That was the opening night. So it'll be good to see them again. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions for next Monday to lockedonheat@gmail.com and tweet your questions on comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to subscribe to the show to get podcasts automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. A note: for those of you that used to listen to us via Audioboom, we have moved our provider from Audioboom to Panoply. So either use the iTunes link or the Deezer/Stitcher link, or find us over there at Panoply. Something to be aware of. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.